got the plague.
I got a fever.
You got the plague.
Welcome to The Plague, the podcast where we look not just at the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, but at the societal plagues, the plagues created by human socioeconomic systems that make the coronavirus more virulent and dangerous. I'm your host, L.M. Bogad, broadcasting from my shelter-in-place bunker. And every episode, we examine a different societal plague, a political or social pre-existing condition that, cross-indicated with the coronavirus, makes it deadlier than it could otherwise ever be. The coronavirus infects the human body, but what illnesses in our body politic make us more vulnerable? Economic inequality, environmental devastation, labor precarity? We pick a different social plague each week and talk with an expert about how that plague makes this pandemic worse and what we can do about it. Today's guest experts are Annie Sprinkle and Beth Stevens, and they'll be talking about the plague of what they call eco-matricide and how eco-sexuality is the cure. Beth Stevens and Annie Sprinkle have been pollinating the eco-sex movement through art theory, practice, and activism since 2004. They've produced numerous performance artworks, eco-sex symposiums, weddings to nature entities, workshops, walking tours, and art exhibits. Their award-winning documentary, Goodbye Galling Mountain, an eco-sexual love story, played many film festivals and is on iTunes. Beth is an art professor at UC Santa Cruz, and Annie earned her PhD in human sexuality. Their new film is Water Makes Us Wet, about the pleasures and politics of water. It's screened at Documenta 14 and the New York Museum of Modern Art. They aim to make the environmental movement a little more sexy, fun, and diverse.
You've got the plague. You've got the plague.
Beth Stevens and Annie Sprinkle, we're so excited to have you on The Plague. Can you talk to us about what you have identified as a major plague and terrible pre-existing condition in our society, which is something that you call eco-matricide? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, yes. A lot of people, this is Beth, a lot of people think about the Earth as Mother Earth. And while there are many heartwarming connotations that come with that, it also seems that people think they can take advantage of the mother archetype of the Earth. And so they take and take and dig and extract and cut and drill. And right now the Earth is dying, and it's died many, many little deaths along the way, but we're in real, we're in really tough straits right now in terms of the ecological well-being of the Earth, to the point of ourselves having killed our mother Earth.
Right. That we feel like the Earth is, it's usually depicted in a lot of cultures as female, or, you know, if you see art sculptures of the Earth, they're female. Obviously, you can use any archetype, any gender. We tend to think of the Earth as trans, all genders. But, treat women not as well as they might treat men, because we are a patriarchal society and women are abused, raped, and exploited. And being that their society sees the Earth as, imagines the Earth mostly as female, people feel they can rape, abuse, and exploit the Earth. Of course, we are part of the Earth as well.
And since the Earth is seen as a mother, even though we're raping, abusing, and exploiting the Earth, the mother is supposed to always come back and take care of us. Mm.
You're making me think of that strange tale, the kid's book, The Giving Tree, by Shel Silverstein, where it's like, it's this thing, the tree is like the mother, and it keeps letting the little boy cut off pieces and take pieces away. And there's and that's it. Like, it's kind of a bizarre story. But I guess, I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, Mother Earth is this is this really powerful paradigm. I appreciate what you're saying. Like, actually, in a patriarchal society, it may actually lead to mistreatment of the earth more.
Well, I think that we are doing more than mistreating the earth. We're hacking the earth to bits. And all of the good things that that our government, you know, tried to do with the Clean Water Act or the Clean Air Act or the Environmental Protection Agency, you know, none of these were perfect devices for stopping, you know, the kind of destruction that capitalism and, you know, patriarchal capitalism wreaks upon the earth. But they were trying, you know, and those things are being abolished by our current federal government. And that's a plague,
yeah.
You know, and it's releasing things that were never intended to be released into the onto the surface of the earth or into the atmosphere. And it's really crazy.
Right. I mean, I guess the despoiling of the earth, Beth, I know you're from Appalachia and you've talked about that a lot in your work. And Annie, I know you and Beth have gone to do work in Appalachia around the devastation there, around resource extraction. Does that fit in? Does like the sort of blowing up the whole side of the mountain, mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
Does that fit into this eco-matricide sort of paradigm you're talking about?
Well, that would be a great example of eco-matricide because, you know, you think about the earth those mountains, you think about being in the bosom of the mountains and then you blow the bosom up, right? I mean, it's just this incredible. Our film was called Goodbye Golly Mountain, an Eco-Sexual Love Story. And you can actually see it on Amazon. Or no, not Amazon.
No, that's on iTunes.
iTunes. Yeah, Golly's like G-A-U-L-E-Y. But anyhow, that's a perfect example of eco-matricide. What do you think, honey?
Yeah, the Appalachian Mountains, if you've been there, West Virginia, they're so feminine and soft and curvy and gorgeous. And, you know, I tend to see those mountains as female as well. And we're not against the idea of using Earth as mother archetype because it's very beautiful. The Earth does feed us and take care of us in very motherly ways. But we're proposing the idea of Earth as lover, imagining that. You can also imagine the earth as a friend or a sister or a daughter or a grandmother. I mean, we say the earth is in menopause. Huh. She's a very old lady and she's disrespected, really disrespectful activities towards the earth. And honestly, even though we are made of water and stardust and we're made of oil, all the things that are, you know, part of nature. We are nature. We're not separate. We still, yeah, we think of ourselves as separate and better than, you know. Yeah. And
well, is there something about, oh, mom's always going to provide for me and I don't really have to give back, is part of the patriarchal paradigm maybe. Like, mom will always be there for me. And in reality, if we don't have a reciprocal nature, reciprocal relationship of some kind with Gaia, with everything, with nature, it can't function that way. That's a one-way relationship. Is that what you're getting at, or?
Well, I think that is one of the things. Yeah, that totally makes sense. That's one of the things we're getting at, and that's one of the reasons that we're trying to shift the metaphor from Earth as mother to Earth as lover. Because if you have a lover and you're not reciprocal with that lover, the lover will leave, and death is a form of leaving too. So, you know, as we take from the Earth, you know, always having to have a greater GDP.
Sure.
GDP. It can never. You know, it always has to be greater and greater, which means more and more taking, more and more destruction, more and more extraction, right? Mm-hmm. The Earth doesn't really, I mean, you know, it hasn't even had a chance to catch its breath, literally, until this COVID-19 plague has happened. And now, you know, everyone's realizing and noticing how much better the Earth is doing. The air's cleaner, the animals are returning to all kinds of places. Mm. But the Earth as lover is really a statement of reciprocality, you know, reciprocity.
I see.
That, you know, the Earth gives to us and we give back to the Earth. And It's not a one-way street, you know. It's about giving and getting and giving back, and about gratitude.
Mm-hmm. It's like we kind of have a broken feedback system in the patriarchal society, whereas people have watched the before the plague hit, really up until recently, the stock market skyrocketing, and it was skyrocketing in a large part because of environmental and other regulations being lifted. You know, things that mm-hmm. damage the earth made the stock market go up. So if the system is being given this kind of almost a bump of cocaine in terms of like getting higher briefly by doing the wrong thing, we've got a broken sort of thermometer on what's working. And I appreciate your pointing out that actually this stoppage of all of this extraction, unfortunately, because of a pandemic, is giving us a message that's a little more instructive of what we need to do. Does that, you know, like we need to stop polluting. We need to figure out a way to go forward without extracting and polluting.
Well, it's really interesting, Larry, because I don't actually think this pandemic's stopping extraction. I think that our government right now is using this pandemic to, do all kinds of new mining projects and new drilling projects and new pipeline projects. Mm-hmm. So while the population is shut in at home, you know, and all of these sort of draconian laws can be made, the Trump administration is actually freeing up corporations to extract more. And so, you know, what's happening is the extraction's continuing to happen, but we're not burning the fuel right now. But that fuel, you know, is being taken out. And so, it's a real bait and switch.
Very right? good point. There's disaster capitalism and there's pandemic capitalism. And here
yeah.
we are.
Mm-hmm. Here we are.
Mm. You know, one of the other archetypes we think about is how the earth being imagined is female. People don't try to dominate and control the earth like sometimes people try to dominate and control females. So, for example, the fires coming soon back at the end of summer, and global warming, all these things, these are people, well, somewhat caused by people, these big problems. And people think they're so powerful that they can dominate and control the Mother Earth. And part of our mission is to be like yentas, to help people, relationship counselors, help people connect with the non-human worlds in a reciprocal relationship. And that's basic ecofeminism. And I have to, shout out the ecofeminists that came before us.
But it's also it's post-humanism, it's science technology studies. It's a series of different, kinds of fields.
Absolutely. But advances in these fields, acknowledging that these new paradigms and ways of thinking about political economy and community.
The paradigms are new, but they're also old. I mean, a lot of indigenous cultures hold these beliefs and have, since before 1492.
Right.
And some do consider the earth as father and the sky as mother. Other cultures, it's father sky, mother earth. And we aren't saying that's a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's just some of us don't get along that well with our mothers. Like, I always had a problem accessing a good relationship with a non-human. I was a city girl, and I didn't know how to connect and love the earth because, I saw the earth as a mother, or imagine the earth as a mother. And the minute I realized that I could imagine the earth as a lover, everything shifted and I was able to deepen my relationship. But it's not for everybody. And, a lot of people do rape and abuse and exploit lovers too. So this is not the be-all, end-all cure for the problem.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, I appreciate that kind of pantheistic. You're saying whatever metaphor brings you more in harmony with nature, mm-hmm. and it's going to work different in different cultures. But mm-hmm. yeah,
And for different people. Some people just can't go there and imagine an Earth as lover, mm-hmm. you know, because they are really happy with the Earth as mother archetype, which is fine. You know, that's great. Whatever works for people.
Well, there's also the issue of sexuality and gender, and some people get really freaked out by the term ecosexual. Mm-hmm. But we see ecosexual as really being an encompassing and very welcoming sexuality. You know, it's like an ecology of sexualities. Anyone is welcome to be an ecosexual. You can be straight and be an ecosexual. You can be bisexual and be an ecosexual. You can be, you know, asexual and be an ecosexual, as long as you, you know, really honor your relationship with the earth.
Right.
And that's really where we're coming from, is this very open place.
It's fantastic. And in adding this vocabulary to the movement, I think, gives us a whole new way to think and to think and to feel on these issues, and even to take action. So maybe what we'll do is, you know, we've analyzed the disease with this eco-matricide that you've laid out so clearly, and the way that it continues even during the pandemic. Maybe we'll take a short break and come back and talk a little bit about eco-sexuality in action as a cure or a treatment for that plague.
You've got the plague. You've got the plague.
Annie and Beth, you've been advocating and exemplifying in your activism and your art and your filmmaking eco-sexuality for quite some time now. And I'm wondering if you could share with the audience examples of actions and performances and art you've created and events that you've created as eco-sexuals in the world.
We've done 21 big performance art, experimental, conceptual weddings where we married different nature entities. So we married the snow in Canada. We've married Lake Calavesi in Finland. We've married the Appalachian Mountains. We married the sun here in San Francisco on Bernal Hill in our neighborhood. We've married soil in Austria. So we do site-specific environmental activist kind of weddings. But what happens is, you really, once you make that vow, and everybody's invited to make the vow, whether it's 100, 200, 300, we've had 500, 600 people come, they can make the vows to love, honor, and cherish
the earth until death brings us closer together forever.
Beautiful.
So everyone is invited to make the vows. We always have objectors to the wedding, you know, but we follow the basic wedding ritual. And our mission is really to try to make the environmental movement a little more sexy and fun and diverse, because we don't always fit into different factions of the environmental movement, because we're weirdos and queer and artists and
sex positive,
former porn stars, mm-hmm. star. And, you know, we can't be ourselves, Beth. Yeah, she's a wild hillbilly girl, and sometimes she hugs trees and in public.
Yeah, we've done public tree hugging. We've also, in addition to the weddings, and I just want to say that once you make a vow to love, honor, and cherish the earth, it makes you see everything differently.
Oh.
Because you're really connected at that point, and you don't want to see other people abusing or misusing.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
the natural environment. I mean, it hurts to see that, even as we drive cars.
Yeah.
You know, we produce garbage. I mean, there are these times when, you know, like in our second film, Water Makes Us Wet, there's a scene where we're eating hamburgers from McDonald's. And it's just this very conflicted and funny and, like, you know, scene that we're part of this capitalistic system.
Sure.
But we do try to live up to our vows.
Yeah.
And we try very hard.
Well,
but we
still have
fly to Europe. But now, maybe that's over.
I know. Greta Thunberg cast a spell and all the airplanes are no longer flying.
So we're going to take a sailboat next time.
Well,
but we are all eco sinners, and we certainly use plastic.
Sure.
And
well, this is the thing is, I think when there's a purity test that's impossible to pass, it is immobilizing and paralyzing. And basically, if we all recognize, when you wake up in the morning and put the coffee in the coffee maker or whatever. Okay, you're already implicated in the system because you're a cell in the organism. So let that be and do your best and be part of the movement and embrace the complexity and the contradiction and try to make the math as good as you can. Because if you wait for the moment to take action when you are pure, you're going to be waiting a long time, aren't you?
Well, we don't really believe in purity. Yes. We like dirt. We like being dirty.
Absolutely.
You know,
I couldn't agree.
You know,
more.
You were asking some of the things that we had done. We did. We've done several dirt bed pieces where we actually make love in a bed of dirt.
Yes,
and
as performance art,
as performance
in
art,
public
yeah.
on stage in theaters. We do outdoors, not just on stage.
I honestly believe that movements that depend on purity kind of spawn monsters. And when we agree to be impure and complex and, you know, have a complex ecosystem, we're going to thrive a little bit more. And I've seen that in your work because you embrace that, all of that complexity and fun and playfulness as well.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot more fun. Yeah. I mean, being pure is really, it is really a drag, you know, because it's impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you always are, you know, measuring yourself against this impossible measure, and you just end up being kind of mean and resentful and bitter, and then you punish other people.
Yeah, I think that sounds
like we're seeing that all over the place right now, you know.
Absolutely. You know, if I can go back to your amazing mass weddings for a bit, I see them as these wonderful commitment ceremonies, which is what a wedding is, right? But when we need more ritual and sacredness and playfulness in our movements. And, you know, I've seen your weddings. I participated in one, as you know. We can talk about that in a minute.
The cosmonaut.
So for the listeners, there was a marriage to the moon down in Southern California. And I was very flattered and honored for y'all to invite me to do something. And yeah, I played a cosmonaut.
You were the cosmonaut who got lost in outer space.
I fell in love with the moon.
It was so beautiful.
We had a lot of fun, and I thank you for letting me play along. And the costume is one of my favorites. But yeah, I really loved being at that wedding as well as being a playful character within it because I saw this wonderful commitment ceremony. I'm committing to this entity of the universe, in this case the moon, provoked by NASA setting off explosions on the moon to try to find water. But even when you're doing a commitment ceremony for the mountains that are threatened in Appalachia, there's got to be something beyond the purely rational and the purely mathematical where you say, I've been part of this ritual with all these wonderful people and we had fun, but it was also serious and poignant. And I'm going to do something to defend these mountains now. Or the ocean, you know. I think it's a beautiful part of what you do, is that it really gets us to feel it and experience it, and the commitment ceremony is in our bones after you've been through one of these weddings.
If people are curious, they can search on the internet "EcoSex Wedding Project" on Vimeo. There's a 10-minute video of some of the clips of the wedding, and at weddings, I believe you're in it, Larry. I'm not sure, because we focus on 7 different weddings, and the moon wedding is in there.
Wonderful.
So, wonderful. Yeah, I mean, doing all those weddings really made me connect with the, you know, all these entities. In fact, we had retired that project, but Amy Franceschini of Future Farmers asked us if she could produce a wedding to Fog, and with using some of our ideas and collaborating somewhat. And so we just married the Fog at UC Santa Cruz. And I tell you, since I took those vows to the Fog, to love, honor, and cherish, so I feel completely different about Fog. I'm in love with Fog now, and I really found Fog an irritation.
And I can say, you know, this was right at the end of February. It was on February 28th, leap year day. And, you know, it was only a few weeks before the shelter in place thing took hold. And it was really comforting to have done that, to have that be the last kind of performance art thing that we did, even though it was really Amy Franceschini's piece and the Future Farmers piece. You know, they were doing that in collaboration with us and with the Fog and with UC Santa Cruz. And it was really beautiful. So it has been something that's, you know, been kind of comforting to think about in this moment of sort of social fucking distancing.
Yes.
Can I say the F word on your podcast?
Sure. I think it was appropriate.
Sorry.
Yeah. I think in the moment we're in, we can be as frank as we need to be. But I absolutely appreciate what you're saying, that, you know, we need to make these commitments, and you learn in many different ways, and you commit through many different kinds of stimuli that make us commit and become part of a movement. And what's the role of playfulness in the movement to you? Why is it important to be playful and have fun?
Because we're little animals, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we really are. And I think also that the environmental movement, I mean, if you look at the situation, if you look at the eco-matricide that's going on all around us all the time, it is very heavy and very depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to, you know, fully recognize that and to absorb that is, it's shattering. And in some ways, I feel like the only response to that is to have fun, right? Because otherwise, it's so easy just to, you know, kind of slip into anger or rage or depression or alcoholism or, you know, irony or you know, just or become, you know, a coal owner or something. You know, like, it's just so, like, you know, what I'm saying is that, you know, it's so overwhelming that humor and fun are one of the ways that out of that, you know, and to empower yourself and other people.
Well, I feel that permaculture is a term we use a lot. And I think that permaculture, the idea that something should be done so that it's sustainable and that it can renew itself, I feel that permaculture concepts apply to the body of the activist as well. And I think we forget that sometimes, and that's how burnout happens. So to approach things in your way, which is totally serious and committed and full on and kind of wonderfully militant, but in a way that gives joy as well, I admire it, I have to say. Yeah.
We like to educate people and educate ourselves too about the issues, and sometimes humor really helps the medicine go down. We made a film, Water Makes Us Wet, an ecosexual love story, where we really learned about water, and we're both educators and we're both students. So, you know, learning should be fun. And while we are number one artists and we try to make good art, and Water Makes Us Wet showed at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, so it's not a piece of shit.
And Documenta.
And it is on Amazon.
Yes.
You can watch it and free for Prime members.
And Documenta.
Yeah, and it showed at Documenta. We were Documenta artists. So we've been, you know, relatively successful with this work. But, you know, I like to dress up, and, you know, ritual, you want to dress up. We do eco-sex walking tours with, you know, actually in Documenta, we had 200 people on a tour. We had a cast of 10 or 11 of us and a big sound system, and we get people to, through their senses, connect erotically, sensually with flowers and trees and the grass, do grassalingus, do breathing, erotic breathing, and so we get people's eco-sexual gaze on through these walking tours through the senses. So sensuality and sexuality are part of what we do. I've been a sex positive activist and educator for many decades. So I'm also really interested in expanding the idea of what is sex and questioning where does the body start and end, and what we do to our own bodies we're doing to the earth, and vice versa, what we're doing to the earth we do to our own bodies, because
well,
we are the same.
We can tell that because of the diseases people are getting now. I mean,
right.
You know, the rate of cancer is like off the charts, and even this COVID-19 plague is being connected to, you know, different kinds of environmental catastrophes,
yes,
really.
Absolutely. In fact, our first episode was an interview with Jeff Conant, And he made the point that deforestation makes pandemics more likely to happen. And he broke that down really clearly. And I'm glad you mentioned that. But so, like, the body is a microcosm of the entire ecosystem. And what's happening inside is what's happening outside. I thank you for making that clear. Can I ask you what kind of... you've had some resistance to some of your actions at times in different countries, and then you've also had some wonderful successes, I feel. And I was wondering if you might want to share either some reactions that you had to overcome in certain places, or just times where you really felt you got a lot of people on board and it was really successful.
Well, we sometimes have a hard time getting grant funding to support our work because just the term eco-sex scares people. And there's a sort of mid-career film granting agency for women. And I sent them in our ideas for Water Makes Us Wet. And they gave me the feedback that, you know, their organization doesn't want to fund our kind of art, right? And I mean, the sort of sex negativity has been something that we've really had to go up against. Right. But in spite of that, we've had really wonderful critics and curators like Paul B. Preciado, who, you know, began by really being an admirer of Annie's post-porn work. And he has really promoted our ecosexual work as a sort of extension of the post-porn work. And, I mean, we've had wonderful supporters, especially in Europe, but we've also... you know, had people protest us in Norway or
anti-porn feminist. We've had the Moon Wedding, Larry, that you were performed in, which was 500 people and who attended and 150 helped collaborate on creating the wedding. It was the Parks and Recreation tried to cancel our contract because we had a contract to do a wedding. And Reverend Billy was our officiant, who's the artist, Billy Talon, who's amazing and has the Church of Earthaluya and the Church of Stop Shopping and a fantastic choir, and they were at that wedding. Anyway, controversy helps. You know, we try not to shy away from controversy. When our contract, they tried to cancel our contract, Reverend Billy said, "It's a miracle. What a blessing."
We called and said, "Oh, Billy, something terrible has happened. They canceled our contract."
Like a week before the wedding, people were coming from Europe and had hotels, and it was a disaster. So we got a lot of publicity, and we even were able to fundraise because people wanted it to happen. So we did, I think, a Kickstarter.
Yeah, we did a Kickstarter.
Because it got so much bigger, but they were afraid we were going to moon the moon, which we were going to. I don't know. They thought we were going to be very, have
they
a flash mob.
They thought we were
going to
have a porn star orgy.
And a flash mob, and, you know, people, just to hear the word eco. Plus, of course, our work, the wedding projects, was also a protest about the idea of a marriage being only between a man and a woman. Right. Reverend Billy just did an amazing, brave piece. He's been arrested dozens of times. He planted a rainbow flag in a pink suit in Central Park at that...
that church of Billy Graham, you know, Billy Graham's son.
Falwell.
Yeah. No, it was Billy Graham.
Oh, yeah. So where they discriminate against LGBTQ and Muslim, you know, anyone that's not in their religion can't work there. And God knows if they're dying, who are they going to save? The people that have their same religion and not queer people. Anyway, so Reverend Billy was awesome, and he got the Burning Man lawyer.
Lightning,
his name is Gross. Terry Gross.
Anyhow, he was Burning Man's lawyer, and he went up against the Park Service, and they backed down immediately because it was really discriminatory platform that they had to stop the wedding.
But we had to promise not to moon the moon.
And you might not have noticed this, Larry, but they had their SWAT team practice while we were actually having the wedding.
You know,
so it was a very thinly veiled threat.
Yes, I remember us talking about it before that. Oh my gosh, they're trying to shut this wedding down to the moon. And then afterwards, we were talking about the SWAT team thing. I couldn't believe it. And isn't it all tied together, though? Eco-matricide, patriarchy, homophobia, sex negativity. This is all part of the same. You can see how they interlock, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it's because, a lot of corporate greed and trying to control people, getting us hooked on computers, which, God, we really are now.
But it's also the military-industrial complex, because the military spends tremendous resources on, having all of their planes and equipment and all of these places all over the world, and they need a lot of fuel to do that. And so they're invested in mining and things like that too. So they'll protect it. They'll protect it with SWAT teams, with the military. They'll send the military up to, Standing Rock or whatever they need to do to protect their resources.
Right. And the extraction process, for sure.
Well,
I'm so happy that you all are in, I almost said the fight, and I want to rephrase that, I guess, but the struggle.
We're in the cuddle. We're in the cuddle.
In the dance.
We're not fighters, Larry. We're lovers, So one of the pieces we did when we were in Athens, Greece, was we brought back our old iconic cuddle piece. Mm. And Paul Preciado wrote a text that went with that piece about, governments putting up border walls, and in response to that, we say cuddle. In response to keeping out the migrants, we say cuddle, right? So we're cuddle artists as well as the other things that we do.
Love artists.
Yeah.
Life is art, artists and experimental conceptual artists. Mm-hmm. And we try to, we've done the eco-sex movement since 2008. We married the earth in a big wedding at Santa Cruz. And we've found it so powerful personally that we've been sharing it. Sometimes we think maybe we're done with it and it's time to go on to the next thing. But we keep coming back to it because it's really, really effective in fighting the plague of eco-matricide. There's eco-sexuals now all over the world, and we even mapped them. Someone made a map, and this concept really caught fire. We didn't invent the idea, but we certainly took the ball and ran with it.
Well, we turned it into a movement, I think.
Yeah, and we've created an eco-sex manifesto
that we would like to read on your show when the time is right.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Well, exactly. In fact, I was going to say, this is amazing, and I think your cure is exactly the prescription we need to deal with this terrible plague. Let's take a brief break, and when we come back, I'd love to hear you do that reading.
The plague. I got a fever. You've got the plague.
Annie and Beth, can you please share this document? Because I'm a personal fan of it, as I am of all of your work, when you are ready to share. And maybe you can even set it up, but tell us what we're about to hear.
Well, when we realized that we had started a movement, right? We didn't really intend to start a movement, but when we realized that we had, we decided that, every great movement has a manifesto. And we thought, wow, we should have a manifesto. So we wrote an eco-sex manifesto, but then our manifesto was quite long. And we were hanging out with your friend, Guillermo Gomez Pena, around our kitchen table. And we decided that we should, maybe just collaborate and edit our manifesto down a little bit, and he could add his voice. And we recycled our manifesto a little bit. Yeah.
Also, we shortened it because he did a reading of it at the Gay Pride, Queer Pride parade, where we officially added the E to GLBTQI++. So now we say GLBTQIE. Don't forget the E.
It spells giblets if you.
And we filmed it. It's in Water Makes Us Wet, is the reading by Guillermo of this eco-sex manifesto. And it's 2.0.
Well, this is an edit of the original.
Yeah. There's a 1.0, and this will be our 2.0.
Wonderful.
Okay.
So,
eco-sex manifesto. We are eco-sexuals.
The earth is our lover. fiercely in love, we are permanently grateful for this relationship. To create a more mutual and sustainable union with our lover, we collaborate with nature. We treat the earth with respect, affection, and sensuality.
We are aquaphiles, pterophiles, pyrophiles, and aerophiles.
We are skinny dippers, sun worshippers, and stargazers.
We are artists, sex workers, sexologists, academics, environmental and peace activists, feminists, eco-immigrants, putos y putas, transhumanistas, nature fetishists, gender-bending gardeners,
therapists, scientists, and educators, revolutionaries, dandies, pollen-amorous cultural monsters with dogs and other entities from radical ecologies.
Whether GLBTQI, heterosexual, asexual, or other,
our primary drive and identity is being ecosexual.
Viva la ecosex revolution!
Wow. Thank you so much, Beth and Annie. This is, I hope it'll inspire a lot of folks to go and watch your movies and learn more about your work and maybe be part of the next wedding. I hope there will be another one. We need all of your work in this world and in this movement. So thank you so much for being on The Plague. And
well, thank you, Larry. This has been really wonderful, and we love you very much. And your work, too, is very important at this moment.
We've learned a lot from you, Larry, on how to be creative activists.
And it's going to be Earth Day soon, so everybody go out there and do some grasslingus and have a cloudgasm or two. It's really fun.
Yeah, get into the soil. Smell the soil. Walk barefoot, dance for the earth. You can find our 25 ways to make love to the earth
on our website at sexecology.org, like orgasm. Yeah.
That's what it's, that's what it's short for. Okay, yeah.
So,
wonderful.
Yeah, just, and we always are open to collaboration and invite collaborators. And we also have the Earth Lab at UC Santa Cruz. It stands for Environmental Art Research Theory and Happenings, Earth Lab. And we have benefactors that help fund the work and support the work. And we invite a lot of students and all kinds of really great artists, bring them out to the Earth Lab. And yeah.
So wonderful. These are amazing resources that you're creating and sharing. And
of course, who knows what the future may bring? I think it's a new world. A new day is dawning, and everything has changed because of the COVID-19.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this is an opportunity for us to push it in the direction we need, while others are mischievously busy trying to push it into more of their paradigm.
Absolutely.
But Beth and Annie, as you have shown, one can take loving and creative action to move things in the right direction. And thank you so much for being on The Plague. And let's come up with a little conspiracy and do something mischievous ourselves soon, either in the virtual world or when we can actually see each other in person again.
We look forward to that, Larry. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Love you both very much.
Love you too. Larry.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Plague Podcast. I'm your host, L.M. Bogad. And for more information on my books and performance work, you can go to lmbogad.com. Sound design and music by Jason Montero and my other friend named Jay.